Does pressure from the community affect the mental health of a police officer?
Well, around here where I'm at, people are trying to buy you coffee and stuff. They're pro-law enforcement. If you're in an area that's not, then yes, absolutely. It's going to make a difference. Because now why are you risking your life and you're being a father or a mother? And you're risking your life for somebody who doesn't care.
Yeah, support law enforcement.
Yeah.
We at the Collective Perspective podcast have set out on a mission to understand some of the most impactful and controversial trends and topics in our lives today. Hi, I'm Jeff.
I'm Travis.
I'm DJ.
Can we find common ground in the middle in a peaceful manner?
Not for political gain,
but for real community benefit.
We believe so. As veterans and concerned citizens, we are bringing together diverse views and fact-based research to navigate this tough terrain in search of a viable path forward.
Only time will tell, but if we listen with open minds and try to understand each other, we just may find a solution, or two, collectively.
That is why we care about what you have to say. If something piques your interest or ruffles your feathers or tickles your fancy or whatever else you'd like, leave us an audio message at podinbox.com/collective-perspective-podcast, all one word, or directly on our show page at mtsjax.fm/collective-perspective-podcast. You'll have to log in, but that won't cost much more than your time.
We'll be discussing your messages on the show, whether you give us a high five or say, hey, you better do some fact-checking, fool. As long as it's positive and it's your perspective, we'll possibly give you some airtime. But remember, it needs to be family-friendly and not defamatory in nature.
Hey, everybody. This is Collective Perspective Podcast, and we're here in sunny Jacksonville, Florida, talking with you
collectively
from the Main Street Suite at Mixed Theory Studios.
Collectively.
Hey, everybody. This is Jeff with the Collective Perspective, and I have my buddy Travis here.
What's up?
We also have Mr. Rick Lanoue. And he is here today to speak about the mental health of a police officer, a law enforcement officer, anybody that goes through high stress and PTSD, definitely a type of scenarios, and how difficult a law enforcement officer's job could be. Hey, Rick, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being on.
Welcome to the show.
Tell us about your career as a law enforcement officer. I understand that you're retired now and that you're an instructor and your heart is still with the brotherhood of law enforcement, teaching new recruits and continuing education for others.
So my career started in 1988, and so I've been involved with law enforcement since then. I retired from Titusville Police Department after 25 years. 14 of that was full-time. The other half of that was reserve time. And in that reserve time, I've been teaching through NASA Protective Services Training Academy. So believe it or not, NASA has a police academy. There are gun toters, right? We don't build them. We just protect them. And we have our own police guys throughout the country at our site. So my job, my current job, what I get paid for is teaching, being an instructor in that academy up to present. That's some of my background. How it relates to mental health is when I was reservist at Titusville, things have changed over, you know, the last decade or so where this is being more of a prominent issue. And they developed a program, and there's peer support, and there was a critical incident stress debriefing for that specific department. Departments have it, but that's the way things are headed. And I worked on both of those, peer support and stress debriefings. And there's other things that go along with that. So I have a relationship with mental health and law enforcement.
Why would you say that it's more prevalent now than it was back when you first started your career?
When I went to the academy in 1990, because I first started out as a dispatcher. So I was a dispatcher. I was 18, working as a dispatcher for a couple years. And then I went transferred into working the road. And it was literally like a four-hour class, right? This is how you breathe. Close your eyes, relax, chill. And that was it. You know, the rate of suicide within the community is increasing. People are like, you know, hey, what's going on with this? And they realize that there's an issue. And they also realize that there's several ways to try to minimize that. Because, you know, you don't see on the recruiting posters, for every officer that's killed in the line of duty, three commit suicide. You don't see that in recruiting posters, right? So why is it changing? It's because they've recognized that that's an issue, and there's programs, you know, which I'm sure we'll get to, that help the folks that want it, need it, or realize what's happening, because there's a lot of variables that go into it.
When would you say that focus shifted to be a little more on that mental health side? Is there a time frame that you can pinpoint? In 2000?
Yeah.
Was there something specific that happened, or it was just like, okay, all of these things are happening. Oh, crap, we've got to do something about this.
Yeah, so it's collective, right? The mental health professionals are seeing stuff with the law enforcement, and then you have people that are the counselors and people that are doing it professionally. They, you know, want to help, right? They're drawn towards this kind of thing because it deals with trauma, right? Trauma and stress are probably the two things that are the backbone of this. And you have trauma counselors, you have stress counselors, and they just recognize the suicide were the catalyst, right? Because that's the pinnacle, you know, because when the suicide happened, there's already been so much stuff that's gone on that's either been ignored or people just aren't educated to recognize it, and then you can't stop it. And then the thing with the suicide also is you don't know when that's going to happen. It might be after they've retired. You know, it may not be during their duty time because it's just collected up to the point, but it's after they've retired. And that just goes to part of just being healthy too. And I've seen a lot of people after they retire, within 5 years, they're dead. I believe it's related to the stress of the job because there's medical issues that are caused by the stress. Now they're backtracking it, trying to figure out ways to get officers healthier, like now, pre-inoculate, right? Get them inoculated to the stress and do it proactively. So there's going to be signs and symptoms that are going to be there. And the peer support is really good for recognizing that kind of stuff.
When they started recognizing it, starting the treatment or coping skills earlier in training, were they also trying to see if there were more people coming in that already had a diagnosis of depression and anxiety? Are those kind of weeded out of, any type of screening for that?
Not to my knowledge, because I teach a class that titled Sympathetic Nervous System, which is what kicks everything off, is what, you know, jacks you up, basically.
The adrenaline.
Adrenaline, epinephrine, norepinephrine, all those chemicals get introduced. And then whenever that's happening to you five times a night, then eventually it's going to catch up to you, right?
Your body's going to start wanting it, right?
My experience is that is not for everybody. Like, everybody doesn't want that. It just happens. They don't have any choice. When you go to a hot call, from hot call to hot call to hot call, it's a roller coaster on your system, right? And that accumulates if you're not healthy. You're not eating right. You're not sleeping right. If you're on midnight shift, because you know the shift work, it takes away years off your life just working the shift work. And that's not me talking. That's people doing research who know way more about than I do. There's so many different avenues for this stuff to come in to where, you know, it leads to the suicide. It leads to the domestic violence. It leads to employment problems. So is there any screenings? A lot of military folks are coming over to law enforcement. It's more of a natural fit. And then you have folks that have been diagnosed with PTSD or under treatment for PTSD. Well, they're not required to let us know any of that stuff. And I've had people in my class after class or during class bring it up and just admit that they've been diagnosed with it. So it doesn't mean they can't do the job. They just need coping skills. You hit it right in the head, Travis, is coping skills and recognition skills. And there's a phenomenon. I don't know if I got it from somewhere. I didn't make it up. The boiling frog syndrome. I mean, you understand where people adapt to their environment. And then there's people getting wound up by stuff that the department's doing, that the legislation's doing, and it's dictating how they do their job. And they can't control that, but they try to get involved in it, and it just eats them up when in reality they don't have any control over it. And accepting that is really hard for a lot of people.
So on that note, with the way you'd say you talk about it in class, you say you encourage them to say, hey, yeah, I have PTSD. I've been diagnosed and I'm being treated.
No, I don't encourage that. It's going to be a lecture. But if you have questions or input, I want you to talk about it. It's not a counseling session. The way it starts out is this is what happens to your body and the negative effects of it. And this is how to counteract that. So from the physical standpoint, because the physiology relates to the mental part too, because it's all interconnected. And, you know, if you don't build a good foundation on what to look for, then eventually something's going to go sideways. But I've had people tell me all kinds of stories that I would never have thought I would have heard, but I'm not asking them to tell me, right? That's not what it is. I'm talking to them saying, this is what's going to happen. This is what happens under stress. Go into great detail what happens to them. And then this is the stress, right? Well, stress is a silent killer unless you inoculate yourself to it, and this is how to do it.
So do you find that officers seek out that mental care, or do they fear being unfit for duty and try to hide it as long as they can?
The answer is yes to that, yes and no. I see that changing because it's being more accepted.
Okay, that's good. Right?
What are the details? So if I come to you and I say, hey, Rick, I have this problem. Can you help me? I need some time.
Yeah. So sometimes it happens just from one event, right? It could be one event and people have reoccurring issues. So there's different ways that it depends on the department too and their policies with this. But there is a way to take people off the road, put them into a light duty assignment, right? They can go into a call investigation and they can just do paperwork. You know, they can do dispatch. They can do other things that don't put them on the road until they get things worked out. There might be a set time, you know, usually it involves some type of EAP counseling, right? Employee assistance program, which most every place has. And it usually deals with that kind of thing until they're either ready or they're diagnosed with something that is going to medically retire them. It could go either way.
Is there ever a time where they are forced to do it? Like, look, man, we saw that this happened and we saw how you're reacting to it. Like, is there a certain limit to where the leadership is saying, like, look, you need to take some time? Because some people are just stubborn and are going to go and be Rambo at all times.
Yeah, as long as there's something set in place for that, which most departments are doing that, you know, and that could be just on a shift. I've heard of other departments who have like a clean room, for lack of a better term, where it's just a room that has low light, no TVs, quiet. Right? Big lounge chair, and you can just chill. And if you want to put music on, put music on just for that immediate thing.
Like a decompression room?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. And they can go to the sergeant and say, hey, I need to go do this for a little bit. I've heard of this. I've not seen it, not experienced it, but I believe that it's out there. And then the other thing would be if it's something that is so egregious, because when you have officers getting involved in, say, excessive use of force, right? They get into a use of force event and they don't stop the use of force. And the problem is it's just anger coming out from stuff that's been built up for the last 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years of their career. And it just happens to be at that boiling point and they're justified in the initiation of the force, but they don't stop because it's not been dealt with. And I'm not making excuses for it. I'm just saying that that is a factor in some, not all, excessive force cases.
How would the mental health affect their performance overall? It looks like it's an aggregate type of event here where it just builds on top of itself. Traumatic event, high stress situation, near-death experience. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are running through an officer's mind. Does it affect a performance? And do they train in a similar situation? Because your body won't go where your mind's never been.
Yeah, performance for sure. And it usually manifests itself. And so there's different results of that, right? Some of suck it up, get to work. I mean, it still happens today. And if your squad or your sergeant or your lieutenant is in that mind frame, you're not going to say nothing, right? Whereas you got somebody who's been there around the block and they're able to open up to them. You got a good supervisor that's willing to support. And if it needs to go higher, then it can. So the performance is one of the signs and symptoms, right? Signs and symptoms of a mental issue. I mean, it could be a physical issue too, but it's up to them to figure that out. Because predominantly, people are not going to ask for it, predominantly. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And I see where, because it's being supported more, that it's more accepted. And, you know, I still think it's cultural within departments. Some departments are wide open to it, some are not. You know, it's kind of like the military when folks get back. And I was alluded on that a little bit, which is whether they have it or not when they come in. And sometimes when they come back from war, they're getting discharged, they go through evaluation. And then some of them are directed by their superiors to just suck it up, don't say a word. And some are saying, you know, say it because. So it goes both ways on both sides of the coin. And some will take advantage of it, right? They'll take advantage of that to try to get retirement or whatever, whatever. But in the middle are the, you know, people that either have had it and have dealt with it, and then they're ready to continue on. And that's straight from military folks. I ask them all and I talk to every class because I want to get information on what's happening now. So that's just coming to the job. And now the part you asked about as far as are they taught, right? Are there things out there for that? So the answer is yes. And part of the class that I was talking about is that. So what it is an effort to pre-inoculate. And you said put them in situation. Yeah, most of that stuff is with use of force. Okay, so because that's usually the highest stress thing there is. I mean, trauma of things you see, and there's going to be an emotional trauma if you have to kill somebody, okay? And there's going to be trauma that you see from other people, so they're empathetic to it, and that builds. It is collective. It is cumulative. And so what we teach are vents, right? Ways to vent it. Just examples, right? And there's a bunch of different ways to vent it.
What are some of the ways that you teach to vent?
Yeah, so the stuff you can control, right? Right out of the gate, is how you eat, how you sleep, how you exercise, right? 100% under your control. Okay. So that's the first thing. And what happens if you learn to focus on that stuff, what you'll find is that you focusing on those things, and because you can't do it all the time, but the less time those things creep in, right? The traumas, the stresses, whatever, they creep in.
Some type of trigger. So does something ever trigger that? Is that usually how it happens?
So it's yes or no, because depending on what stage you're in, if you're at the end of it where you're dealing with what's happening and you're talking to a counselor, whether it's your own personal counselor or one that's appointed by the agency you work for, because like if you get into a shooting or if you kill another human being, let's use that example, before you can come back, you got to get cleared by the agency counselor. And, you know, so you're cleared for duty, right? They're going to do that check before you get cleared for duty. And I've been through that before. I know that just from personal experience.
How have you lasted so long in this career and not be totally, you know, a mental job? Like, man, I mean, I guess it'd be like, how did you get so lucky? I don't think it's luck. It's just mental strength, mental stability.
Not everybody has those coping skills from the beginning. And it's not normal, right? You know, citizens have a normal range of risk. Well, officers have that compounded, the range of risk every day. Right. I mean, we could all die in a car crash, but we might not all get shot, or we might not have a person look you in the eye and try to kill you with their bare hand.
Statistically, suicide is greater than even that.
Yeah.
According to the policechiefsmagazine.org, I found that in 2019, suicide was 10th overall ranked death of the United States for U.S. And a nonprofit called HELP has been collecting law enforcement suicide information since 2016, showing 239 officer suicides in 2019. And it's alarming to see that suicide claims more law enforcement lives than the frivolous killings or accidental deaths in the line of duty.
You know, there's specific training to do specific things, like shooting another human being. You know, back in the Civil War, a lot of the people didn't actually want to kill people 40 yards across from them because it could have been a cousin or brother. You know, they found muskets with 14 or 15 balls and gunpowder packed in there. And every time somebody would shoot, they would recoil like something they shot, but they never shot their rifle. So in the military, they look at this and they say, how do we train that out of them? How do we get that thought process out? And then they went to humanoid targets and they went to, you know, just other training where it's where you're closer, right? The distance makes a difference to the trauma you suffer whenever you are in some type of life and death situation. So our training, we put people in now with the advent of munitions and force on force cartridges where we can actually shoot people safely. Right. Yeah. And if you figure that out, and not that we do as instructors, but we do, but there's also the students do that. And it's basically skill building drills to where we inoculate into that stress by putting them in that stressful situation of being shot because you feel the pain, right? It's not excessive, but you still feel it, and then you actually functioning under that stress and taking away that fear of killing another human in the process. So you're working on your skills under pressure, under stress, and the more you do that, the more inoculated, the more you get used to it. I mean, it's like driving a car. If you remember the first time you drove the car, the very first time you got in it, you go, oh my gosh, right? Now it's not a big deal, is it? We do it every day. Same concept.
Repetition.
Yeah, and more departments are pro training and some are not, you know, so that adds to it.
How does that look, though, as far as the training is concerned? You know, not everybody can train 24/7. You got to have people out patrolling the streets. Do they have training schedules to where, all right, so this week you guys are training for the high stress situations and this week you guys are out in the field?
Yeah, there's standards need to be met for just your basic certification, and then there's in-house training. The ones that are pro training, which is good because it's teaching your officers to live and survive. And then that gives you an air of confidence for those situations. And then that minimizes the stress when you get into them, right? You see how that works to the training is building a foundation to minimize the stress that they would feel. If they haven't been trained for it, they know they haven't been trained for it. And that compounds the stress, which compounds the issue, which leads to fear. I mean, fear is the four-letter word that nobody wants to talk about.
Do you think that some police officers that make mistakes in the line of duty, they had lack of training? Or is it just, you know, sometimes you make a mistake because you had a mental breakdown?
Yeah, so when it comes to mental breakdowns, I always say no. There's mental breakdown versus the person that's just a non-performer is two different things. They all establish a standard for controlling people. They have a standard for firearm qualification. They have a standard for legal knowledge. That's the basic standard, but they go through the academy, the basic, right? But and when it comes to money, it costs money to train. I mean, those rounds are not cheap, and you have to have somebody that's motivated. So it varies. The answer is it varies depending on the command structure and how they understand how training affects that. But the training, whether classroom or experiential training, where you're actually getting out and experiencing these events under controlled circumstances. And then that way people don't freeze up. Or if they do freeze up, we talk about it. Say, okay, let's figure this out. Have them come up with the answer. And then we do it again. And if they don't do it, we do it again until they have a positive outcome. And it just increases their confidence, which minimizes the stress overall.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how traumatic or stressful events can affect the mental health of law enforcement officers on the job. Does pressure from the community affect the mental health of a police officer?
Well, around here where I'm at, people are trying to buy you coffee and stuff. They're pro-law enforcement. If you're in an area that's not, then yes, absolutely. It's going to make a difference. Because now why are you risking your life and you're being a father or a mother and you're risking your life for somebody who doesn't care?
Yeah, support law enforcement.
Yeah. So I think that varies depending on the area that you live. And I think that has to do with the political support, because that political support runs down and then the officers at the end of that list.
What does the term defunded mean to you?
When protesters or people say, let's defund the police.
There's just a lot of misconception here, because in my thought, it means that you're taking the funds away from training police officers, or you want to restructure the pay. Is there something about higher ranking officers? Obviously, they get paid more, but is there a pay structure type of thing involved in the defunding?
I mean, I can imagine what that means if I'm working there, but I'm not in it, right? That's part of the localized support or non-support. And would it make it worse? Absolutely. I think it would, because not everybody does it for the recognition. Not everybody does that. But within the law enforcement ranks, you know, there are people that are doing it just for the money. And then there are people that are doing it because, well, it's simply the right thing to do.
You said that if you were in a community that was not supported, then, you know, I would have to feel the same way that you guys would. I mean, why would anybody go and risk their lives for people that don't care about you or have respect for you? I mean, that's the whole idea of having you on, is to show people, like, look, police officers go through some crazy stuff day in and day out. And like you said, sometimes even four times a day. And like, how much pressure or stress can one human being take?
And having those coping skills or those venting strategies that you mentioned, I like the idea of focusing on the three things that you control 100% of the time: your diet, your sleep, and your exercise. That changed me. That's something that I hadn't thought about before.
And why would you not be told that? Because it's about you being healthy, right? It's about being healthy. So if you're healthy physically, that's going to transfer over into mentally to be able to handle the physiological effects of stress. And the stress of the job, number one, because then you have heart issues and you have other stuff that goes along with that, kidney, you know, you have all kind of other issues that go along with that. I mean, if you're a smoker, non-smoker, I mean, all that stuff plays, but it's just a good foundation, right? Be healthy. And the other mental part of it is to have friends outside of law enforcement. Don't get caught up in just being stuck in with the law enforcement because nobody else understands. If you have that attitude, it's going to work against you. So have friends outside of law enforcement. Be a parent, be a coach, do things outside in the community that occupy your time so that you're helping the younger generation. Don't be afraid of counseling, because that is looked upon as being weak. And from my personal experience, I would not say that at all. Okay. There's also psychologists versus psychiatrists. There's also medications that get involved and come into that treatment of somebody who's diagnosed with a mental health issue or is working on it. They don't even have to be diagnosed with it. You could still be working and still be seeing a counselor about stuff and nobody would know, and somebody's business. Not a big deal, as long as you're still performing.
It's becoming more accepted to have a therapist and to seek that help. So officers today are not shying away from seeking out that help right now?
Yes, I see that changing. Yes. Compared to 25 years ago, 30 years ago when I started, comparatively, right? Yes, absolutely. It's a great thing. Yeah. So it's a track. It's happening. But there's still the individual that has to make that decision. And a lot of that has to do with just mindset about it. You know, the mindset has to be positive. If you have long-term goals or short-term goals and focus on taking care of that stuff, because ultimately you have to take care of yourself. And the answer lies within, right? You're born with everything you need, is how I look at it.
It's how the military looks at it too. If it wasn't issued in your sea bag, you don't need it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our culture tends to say depend on other things, which I'm not saying that's not true. right? Because when you get to a place where you're stuck, you need a counselor to go, this is how you get unstuck.
Do law enforcement agencies consider balance of life techniques? Like, hey, man, you can't be working 80 hours a week. You need to go.
No, I can't say that because I can tell you right now, I know guys that are working 16-hour days.
Wow.
Today, right now.
Well, I mean, yep. The reason I bring it up is because obviously balance of life.
Yeah. Your mental capacity is the issue, right?
Is it because they want to, or they're being, that's just the requirement?
No, they're being forced to because there's nobody working. There's not enough people.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So that's
not enough people,
that's a
right?
different perspective there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a whole nother stress.
Not having somebody to relieve you for the next shift.
The sheriffs in my county are hiring.
Yeah. Everybody is. It's everywhere across the country. But right now, at this point in time, after the pandemic, everybody is short people. I mean, that's the federal place where I work at.
And don't worry, in 20 years, when you run for president, you'll still be clean from this podcast. Nobody can hold anything against you.
Absolutely, right? But it's a huge thing. And if you have the right things in place, peer support is not just people going and talking to each other over beer, because that could be bad, right? Because then you're just looking for somebody to agree with you. But there's the peer support program. People are selected and trained on what to listen for. So if they see stuff, now they can recommend and they can go up the chain, and then we can get first people help that think they don't need it. And we can kind of force that a little bit. And then you have the stress debriefings, where that's usually something that happens right after a major event, within 24 hours, depending on what it is. Because you have a lot of stuff that you see. I mean, people are not used to seeing body parts. People get hit by trains sometimes, you know, and that's a trauma. When kids get hurt, injured for like no reason, die, and it's just even mutilated, stuff like that. And then you have, there's just a plethora of different calls that we go on a weekly basis, and 80% of the population will never see. And that is where the education part comes in. It's not that they don't need to see all that stuff. They just need to have a little bit of understanding. And again, I'm not making excuses for people who are doing stuff that's illegal, immoral, or unethical. That's totally different, because that exists too. I'm not going to deny it because it's real. So we're trying to educate the people on what your options are. Peer support, EAP, from the debriefings, go to them, actually participate. Because within those debriefings, you have professional counselors, you have pastors, or you have people of clergy that are related to religion. So you have people that can relate, and we're all trained. It's not like we just show up and say, hey, let's have a party. We're all trained to go through, and the stress debriefing is an immediate event, which helps, but there's still sometimes long-term effects, and those effects you have to recognize. So we teach those type of effects and what to look for, so that you don't become that boiling frog and just adapt to it to the point where depression, anxiety, and people get dependent on taking drugs to fix their problem. You know, you have what you need on the inside. I'm not saying that you can't take drugs to help that, but once you get your life back together and you get things squared away, then you need to wean yourself off of that and then take control back. Because that lack of control creates anxiety, which compounds into stress, which compounds into suicide.
So the medications are a tool to help them get back to that normal state. And then once they get back there, it's advised to wean off of it under your doctor's supervision.
You know, psychologist versus psychiatrist. You got to figure out which way you want to go, because one is predominantly more drugs than counseling. I was involved in a shooting. I went to a counselor. I never had to take any drugs. And I asked her later, I said, why? Why not? She goes, you didn't need it. You did what you needed to do. I'm like, thanks. Appreciate that.
Well, that's got to feel good that your training helped you get through that.
Well, that and it was facing the issue, right? It was facing the issue. Because I got to a shooting. I killed a guy. And we were really close in proximity. We were like 10 feet away. And I had anger issues related to it, and it was affecting my performance. And I recognized it and went and did the counseling on my own, because nobody's going to see that. But I could see it, right? Because I knew that's not how I was, right? I wasn't an officer for this long, you know, because I had several years under my belt. And I wasn't going to let this behavior that I was doing tarnish what I had built, right? But that was just my own decision to do that. It's about detaching and looking at it from a different perspective, and not looking at it from your own opinion if it's been swayed, if you're in that culture. And it's really hard for people to do that. You have to consciously do it. Otherwise, you get sucked into that boiling frog syndrome. And it's not like it's immediate, but it builds up. It's cumulative. It's like a pressure cooker without a valve, and eventually it's going to let go. The problem is you don't know when.
Is there a suicide hotline that's specific for police officers? And where would someone go if they were having troubles with anxiety, depression? Do they just go to their Watch Commander?
Oh, yeah. So there's suicide hotlines anywhere. There are EAP programs within whatever agency you work for, and that's generally a low-cost thing. And then you can get your own personal counselor if you want to. But the hotline is probably one of the last places they're going to go. They're going to go to somebody who has been to a counselor, and it's known. I recommend all the time, like, you got to take care of it and face it, right? People just want to try to suppress it, and it's not going to work for you.
That's a lot of information that we just listened to, and a lot of good stuff about how law enforcement prepares officers for some stressful situations.
My perception has changed for sure. I didn't realize police officers got as much training from what I've heard on the media and podcasts and stuff like that. I kind of felt like maybe they're undertrained. Maybe they are in some different departments, you said, that have funding going in different places. And training does cost money. We need to have some type of law enforcement because, let's face it, there's bad people.
Yes, evil exists.
Right. And law enforcement officers go through some crazy stuff, man. And I think they should get a lot more respect from the community that they serve and appreciation than you guys do. And I hope you guys are getting paid well enough.
Well, I think also part of that is the local departments and agencies around the country promoting their mental health and support services for their employees. I think those will have a more favorable view from the general population than other departments that don't have an emphasis on mental health or training and preparation for those types of situations.
Yeah, if those programs are in place, then you're going to keep your employee. If you're supporting them, they're going to stay there. Why would they go anywhere else? If you just outcast them and you throw them out to the wolves, or you just ignore them, then you have the other issues. And I'm not saying it relies 100% on those agencies. I believe it goes to the individual to check themselves, you know, do a self-check every now and again, just to check and say, all right, is this good or not good? And just separate yourself and take control over it, right? Because with that lack of control creates the panic and anxiety. Well, control it. Control what you can control. If you can't control it, don't worry about it. Do your best and push on, right? Push on.
Know where to get the help. There's somebody that's been in that situation.
Well, that's what Rick does too, is trains people on this exact topic. You've been listening to the Collective Perspective Podcast, a mature show with the intention of making a difference in society. The Collective Perspective encourages civil debate on our podcast on very controversial topics. In the month of June, we are doing a 200 Conversations for 200 Years initiative sponsored by 90 Forward. On June 15th, at the Underbelly, downtown Jacksonville, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., we are doing a live race card with our buddy Jeremy Mensie, former Jaguar and a former Gator.
And Tatiana Yoga is author of Life Outside the Game, a Sex Trafficking Testimonial.
DJ PM of Mixed Theory Studios is going to be our host DJ. And, you know, have some cocktails and listen to us instead of drinking alone at your house, listening.
Collectively.
Hey, man, we want to thank you for your time. We want to let you know that we appreciate you. We appreciate what you do. We appreciate what your fellow officers do for the community. And I don't think you're paid enough for the amount of stuff. And, you know, especially the outcome when you do retire, like you said, and all of a sudden it's a trigger and you're like, hey, I don't know what's going on.
5 years later, after retirement, you're one foot in the grave already.
You know what the cool thing, Travis, is? This whole coping mechanism exactly is intellectual humility, is being able to take information in, even though you're having these problems, and going, you know what? That isn't the right way to think. This is the right way to think. I have these people helping me. I can get through this and I can get over this mental hurdle.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
It's pretty amazing how that all ties together, doesn't it, Travis?
Yeah. Yeah. That intellectual humility is everywhere. That's a big buzzwords these days.
Sure is. You've been listening to the Collective Perspective Podcast, a mature show with the intention of making a difference in society.
So take a ride with us. Join us at the Collective Perspective Podcast, where your personal truths get a little power wash.
Like what you heard? Subscribe to the Collective Perspective Podcast whenever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also show support for our mission by going to buymeacoffee.com/collectivepod and donating whatever you feel inspired to. We appreciate any help keeping the lights on to bring you thoughtful and researched content as part of this show.
Visit the Collective Perspective Podcast show page on mtsjax.fm, Jacksonville's new music and multimedia network sponsored by Mixed Theory Studios. You can find the transcripts of this episode along with the show notes, material references, links you heard about, and more.
Hey, I want to give a special shout out and a thanks to The Real Jay Dash, a Jacksonville hero, producer, and artist, for sharing his original music with this show, and to the Mixed Theory Studios for recording and production services. We couldn't have done it without either of them. Thank you so much.